Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of the Strong Style Story podcast. I'm just going to come right out and say that I hope everyone is has some a good amount of water with them, because we're going to get extra salty on this particular podcast. And I hope everyone brought their shovels, because we're doing some burials on this one. My name is Jeffrey Wessel. I am your host. I run the Strong Style Story blog at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. I also run the Twitter account at Strong Style, STYL Story, because of stupid Twitter character limits. My co-host today, Chris DeMassino.
Hey guys, what's going on? Well, outside of the fact that there will be salt and burials apparently, and we'll have the sensors ready accordingly, because we're kind of might not be watching our tongues more than the usual.
Yeah, we may be lifting the swearing ban on this episode, because it is not good. And I'm going to go ahead and start the burials off against our against Steve Cash, our third chair, because he dissed us for, you know, some WWE show going on tonight on Sunday the 21st, some SummerSlam thing. Have you heard of that one?
Yes, actually, I have. I just figured it's one of those things. He does have friends with him there, so it's understandable that it's a group thing rather than just him individually doing it. So I'll kind of cut him some slack on that, but we will hear from Steve a little bit later on in the show as we're getting... He was courteous enough to kind of get us a nice little segment on his thoughts on G1, Super J-Cup, a couple of other little things here and there that we're going to be covering here today. So,
Steve, we love you. Steve, we love you. Next time, read the messages, please. We live. And also, I'm not going to bury JB for not being here either, because I know he's got things going on too. So,
and JB, technically still
guys, we love you.
Yeah, it's like JB is our guest chair, so it's understandable from time to time that he'll be busy with his work and everything else. We look forward to eventually having him back on our side as well. Also, just want to say a quick hello to any possible new listeners out there who may have found out about us through Aubrey Citizen's Straight Shoot podcast. Welcome to the fold. Thank you again, Aubrey, for the kind shout out to us, to myself, and all that good stuff. Feel free to check out his stuff at any point in time too, through Straight Shoot, whether it's through YouTube, iTunes, and pretty much any other podcasting methods that you possibly can muster. Let's get on with the show.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that he was a podcaster. I knew him from comics.
Yep,
because he writes comics, so I didn't realize he also did a wrestling podcast too.
It's
a small world.
It's funny because you got into him basically and knew of his name through comics. For me, I knew him through just the wrestling podcast altogether. And so hey, it's interesting.
It's strange. Before I forget, I also want to give a shout out to our special guests from the Super J-Cup special that we did. I want to give a shout out to Michael Spears of the Inside the Gate Dragon Gate podcast, to Lawrence O'Brien of Pro in the Rough through WrestlingWithWords.com, and of course to the almighty Cubs fan, who is the only one to actually call the Super J Cup correctly. So I'm sure he's...
He really did. That's kind of a scary thing, actually.
So I'm sure he's feeling pretty smug this morning when he saw those results. So we are going to get to Super J Cup, and I also want to say that while we're thanking them, I'm going to apologize for wasting their damn time in the end, because we're getting to Super J Cup.
We'll get there when we get there, but as of now we've got, you know, something bigger on the overall NJPW side of things that we'll cover first, and that's obviously G1 Climax.
Oh, yes. That was a thing. It was a good thing overall, with some reservations on my part. I can't speak for you, Chris, or for Steve, but I do have some reservations about how it all shook down. But I will say this. I did enjoy this tournament a lot more than last year's. Clearly, G124 is still going to be the granddaddy, because that tournament was everything.
Yeah, 24 had something special about it, and just the people that they put together for it, the combination of matches, the combination of breakout stars we had out of it. It's just But 26 came close.
26 was very good. 26 was very good. I think a lot of it too was also the presentation, because they did not have the, you know, it was not the single camera, single fixed camera like they did for a lot of G125. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, we got full shows, even if it wasn't commentary on all of them.
We still got good camera work for a majority of those shows, which was went a big way to, in my opinion, it went a long way towards.
It did, yeah. I would totally agree with that. I think the camera work was top notch in this year's G1. It did quite a bit of its job. You know, when you getting you into people, I could say for certain. You know, my honey was watched most of G1 with me, and I mean most of most of G1.
Yeah,
And I know that right out the gate she loathed Naomichi Marufuji.
Oh my goodness! Really?
For beating the tar out of Kazuchika Okada.
Oh, so night one, Naomichi became public enemy number one for her.
A few of them. I'm going to say this for this G1 too. Everybody got beat up in this tournament.
Oh,
this year was brutal. I mean, like, nearly everybody was bandaged, you know, or taped up in some way, shape, or form. I mean, Marufuji had what were those weird ones he had on his spine?
Yeah.
What was that?
You know, I'm trying to recall off the top of my head exactly what it was, but we know it definitely was not anything pretty by any means.
Yeah, I mean,
he had Omega with a friggin' gash on his back.
He had that gash on his back. Tenzan like had an open wound on his left bicep.
How is Tenzan not dead right now? To be honest,
he's already being held together with chewing gum and baling wire as it is.
Crazy stuff all around. But I mean, also part of it, I feel I blame more so on the fact that they had more dates than any time before as well.
Is that true? Because I think last year they did it too. It was a 10-man field in each block last year too. So it was a 19-date tournament, and I don't remember people getting so beat. I mean, okay, not Shinsuke Nakamura missed a couple of days because he had that arm injury. Mm-hmm. But I mean, and you know, lest we forget, Toriano got split the hell open from a Tenzan flying headbutt.
It did seem like it. I think for me specifically, may have had the feeling that it was a little bit longer than last year's tournament. That's probably because of how much people were getting beat up within it. It almost felt like.
There was how anybody came out of that without significant injury is beyond me, because everybody was just like taped up. I mean, Naito had his knee taped up, and I think Okada did too at one point, and Tanahashi was already, you know, he was still coming back from injury, and Shibata had like his whole back basically taped up. I mean, it was ridiculous how much. Yeah, I mean, I guess from a wrestling point of view, it's, you know, oh hey, you know, they're toughening out, they're working through it. But you look at these guys, you're like, holy cow, how are they not just in utter agony right now? Mm-hmm. And they may be.
Definitely.
But in the end, there was only, you know, 20 men entered, one man left. And I'm not sure it was the right one, to be honest. But Kenny Omega, a history-making G1 climax, first non-Asian to win G1 climax.
First Western, third Western to make the finals outside of Rick Rude and Carl Machine Gun Anderson. First Westerner to basically win the whole thing.
Well, you know, we're there's some debate about the whole Westerner definition, though.
I consider it Western Hemisphere of basically the planet? Because I know Choshu was Korean, if I recall.
Choshu's Korean. Yep. Chono, Masahiro Chono, five-time winner of the G1 Climax, was born in Seattle.
Yeah, there is an interesting aspect to that in regards of, I guess we're defining Westerner as in not at all from Japan or any Asian country in this particular
nation. Yeah,
and the fact
I think so too. But I mean, whatever the case, he's the first definite non-Asian to win G1 Climax.
And then there's the fact that he's Canadian too, so that would make him basically, you know, first Canadian to also win altogether.
That's true. Yes, he is Canadian. And to be sure, his matches in particular with Goto in the final and Tetsuya Naito in the what amounted to the B block final, they were very good matches. They ranked up there.
They were that, and I'll give him credit too, because night one against, I believe it was night one, right against
Yoshihashi.
Yes, which just completely blew me away on expectations. Like, they went, I wasn't expecting that stuff from Yoshihashi to begin with, and Kenny actually eventually having to take him seriously made for big.
Well, how about, yeah, Yoshihashi ripping off Shingo Takagi's from Dragon Gate's finisher. I don't know what Takagi calls it, but I know Yoshihashi calls it karma.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like a half Nelson pump handle slam, basically.
Good name for it, to be honest.
Karma? Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could remember what Takagi calls it off the top of my head, but I'm not going to look, so.
I can look this up momentarily here while we transition to the next point. Obviously, tournament like this one, you get a couple, more often than not, the G1 has been infamous for coming up with close to, if not five-star bouts, and we got at least a pair of them according to Meltzer, obviously being one of them being the B-Block Finals between Omega and Naito, the other one being current heavyweight IWGP Heavyweight Champion Kazuchika Okada and his stablemate from Chaos, Tomohiro Ishii, which...
Well, how about, lest we forget, how about Okada Tanahashi?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I mean, there's a reason why they keep putting those two together.
They're magic
together. Because they're magic together. And this is like the second time they've met in G1, and it was a draw.
Yep, crazy.
You know, because it was in, I think it was 13, mm-hmm. G1 23 when they met, and it was a draw there, too. But regarding Omega, I still don't think he's over as a heavyweight. I really don't. And maybe this is what the vehicle was to put him over as a heavyweight.
I think
that's
part of it as well, and a lot of it, to me, it feels that they're doing this, but they're doing this a year too early.
I would agree with that.
But at the same time, a part of me also believes that a lot of it is... Honestly, it kind of comes down to what Ibushi's been doing as of late. The fact that he's still sort of in this weird free agent thing, and he has confirmed he has not signed with WWE, even though he's competing for them in their Cruiserweight Classic right now.
I thought that it was announced that he had signed. No. Has that changed?
Nope, that was just a rumor. Ibushi himself, I believe, confirmed in an interview that he hasn't signed as of yet, that he's still just doing stuff, which could very well, considering that Omega has G1, the G1 Climax briefcase at the moment, there's a couple of decisions they can still make with that, I feel, and we can cover those in a little bit.
Okay, and that's fine.
But if just going back to Omega, the biggest thing about it is that I think a lot of it is just New Japan is realizing we possibly have the hottest gaijin act we've had in quite some time. That we've had
heavyweight
to heavyweight.
Yeah, and Michael Elgin.
Elgin is up there. He's a 1B for me, but I feel that Omega's had that steady presence with them just going from the junior heavyweight ranks to that transition as a heavyweight this year around, to where I think New Japan officials just don't want to risk losing him in the same way they lost four of their main guys at the beginning of this year.
Well, and I could see that, but I think that also makes it reactive booking, which I don't think is... Uh-oh. I just heard a noise. You okay there?
Yeah, I'm good. Just something kind of dropped from my desk here. Oh, and as a quick thing, just because we were at that point, Tagagi's finisher is called Made in Japan.
Okay, all right.
The bump on Nelson Driver. Anyways, trivia for those who were curious.
Michael Spears would have set us on that path.
He probably would have done it right off the bat, which, hey.
Yeah, more power to him. So. Definitely. Anyway, going back, I mean, and that makes it reactive booking because, which I don't think reactive booking is always a good thing. In fact, it very rarely is a good thing to do reactive. WWE may be sniffing around Kenny Omega. Oh, here, let's give him G1 Climax. And I think part of the problem. You know, Omega winning G1 Climax at its face value is not a bad thing. I think that now that G1 Climax is tied to the shot at Wrestle Kingdom, number one, I think it takes away the prestige of G1 itself. Because for a while, it was like those are two things. You could either be the champion. Actually, you could win G1 as the champion, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of taken away from it because you can look at it now and say, oh, yeah, he's champion. Yeah, he ain't winning, you know? And I think that kind of takes away from it a little bit. But also, again, the reactive booking, do we think that Kazuchika Okada versus Kenny Omega can draw the Tokyo Dome?
Yes, I do. I do believe
it. You do? Okay.
I just think it's a matter of that's the route that they're taking. It's a matter of just setting it up appropriately, whether that is giving Bullet Club, kind of getting Bullet Club back into the fold, or just having Omega break away from it with the Young Bucks and just being the elite throughout the entirety of it and causing just havoc. That's one route that they can take towards it. If they're really not sure on Omega within due time, they still have a couple of months to have Naito just do very much Naito-like things and jack that briefcase from Kenny Omega.
It seems like Naito is from some of the booking I've been seeing. It looks like that they're trying to paint a picture of Naito against Elgin now.
That could be something that they could be doing as well. But I mean, I could see that being, you know, domination and power struggle at most. I mean, as I mentioned, there's still time.
There's still time. There is still time. You mean destruction and power struggle.
Thank you for that. Yes.
I think we were thinking of Dominion, but yeah.
My mind is everywhere, but thank you for that correction.
I don't mind that Kenny Omega won G1 per se. I don't think he's over quite as over as a heavyweight as people like to think, because his Intercontinental reign was not noteworthy. I'm sorry, it was not noteworthy at all. I think part of that is because his two defenses was against Michael Elgin, and you know, one of them was supposed to be Tanahashi, and that didn't work out, obviously.
And I think that's a lot of it, too, is just the fact that the matches, you know, it kind of was like him and Elgin had good matches together, but there wasn't really a variety of opponents for them to take on. And I almost feel that's kind of the same way as with Naito as well. His first reign as heavyweight champion, kind of at the end of the day, had good matches, but not a whole crazy variety of opponents to it. And then again, maybe that's just like a first title kind of curse that you need to kind of get through.
If you go through the history, I mean, you see people like Chono, Muto, Sasaki, even Choshu didn't really have noteworthy first IWGP heavyweight title reigns.
And from there, well, Chono notwithstanding, from there, the other guys ended up getting, you know, more of a prestigious run down the road.
Yeah, and Chono, not so much. Thanks, Steve Austin. But yes, I will hold that against him. I like Stone Cold, but yeah, I'm still going to hold him breaking Chono's neck against him.
We told you there would be salt, ladies and gentlemen. We are just beginning.
Oh boy.
Mostly Jeff, maybe bits and pieces me, but you know, we'll get to it when we get to it.
Well, here I'm going to throw some more salt on this. I think it is now very clear that Hirooki Goto is not going to accomplish a damn thing in New Japan Pro Wrestling at this point. They are not going to do anything with him noteworthy. And I don't care if he made you know, the semifinals of two tournaments this year or not. What is he? What are they doing for him?
And, you know, at this point, I'm kind of just off the charts, beyond curious as to what direction they're really trying to take Goto into, because it seems like he may have found a little bit of his footing back with Chaos, but at the same time, I wouldn't have given him the... Personally, I would have actually, as good as Goto Omega was for the finals, just given the fact that anybody who's somewhat familiar with New Japan's history, they're like, Goto's not going to win this, and if he does, it's not going to go anywhere, because he's 0-8 in heavyweight title matches.
Right, and plus, I mean, look at these finals that were set up, and look at the storylines that got deep six because of it. I mean, if Tanahashi overcame Okada, okay, well, they have, like, you know, the feud of the 2010s. Yeah. Not just in New Japan, I think in all pro wrestling.
Oh, we still have a while for them to establish that, and it's still something that I believe they're going to be able to do. It's just one of those chapters that you're kind of like, you understood why they had to do the draw the way they did, so somebody else could get out of A block with the win. But at the same time, it's like, Goto? Really?
We're still owed an Omega Tanahashi match.
True.
So they could have made good on that one.
They definitely could have. I feel that Maru Fuji could have been just as good of an opponent as well for Omega.
I don't know about but do you want a Noah guy winning?
I don't think he would have won it. No, it still would have been Omega going over, but I think it would have been just as interesting of a matchup to see, just because two guys in different companies, something that you don't see very often, and ironically enough, Kenny Omega would be fighting for New Japan on this one. So
that much is true, and that is true. But not only that, but Naito, I mean, this has been the storyline of 2016 has been Los Ingobernables against Chaos.
Yeah.
So they kind of derailed that too.
There's that, but at the same time, if we, it's one of those things too. We knew with Goto and Omega that Omega probably would be going over, but hey, Goto would probably make a good fight of it. Had it been Goto and Naito, we would just be like, well, this is a repeat of the New Japan Cup all over again. It's going to be a good match, but we all know who's going over.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, but let's not forget our tagline here is, where we try to make sense of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And again, I can also see the value in trying to create a new storyline, but we have all these other ones that weren't done yet. I mean, could we say for sure that Chaos won the feud against Los Ingobernables? No, not by a stretch.
Because I don't think they're done with that by any means. And I mean, that's something eventually to explore with the next, with at least the next big show or so, to really maybe just determine that once and for all as to who wins that war, whether that means we get Okada and Naito as a rubber match to really decide everything.
Since they were in different blocks, you know, it looks like the next two challenges we're going to see are going to be either Bad Luck Fale and or Maru Fuji.
True, right?
With that. Noah, but we'll hang on to that point because I like the G1 Climax tournament. I liked the matches. I mean, I liked a lot of the matches. In the end, I'm just not sure long-term about Kenny Omega being the guy to challenge Okada at the Tokyo Dome. I don't know if that's going to be a draw. I don't even know if it's going to be a good storyline.
And that's just one of those things that we're going to have to wait and see on, because at the beginning of the year, we were kind of doubtful as to where a lot of the direction of New Japan as a whole was going to go after, you know, seeing Nakamura, Gallows, Anderson, and, you know, Ibushi, and all those.
AJ.
AJ. Honestly, yeah. Just seeing all these different guys that were such key features within the product, you know, just suddenly bolting. And, you know, we've seen that.
We did, and you know what? Okay, you're right. At the beginning of the year, we had questions about that. And it looked like we had those questions answered by March and April. Mm-hmm. Because suddenly we had clear directions, we had clear faction wars going on, and now everything's going to be all muddled again, you know? Now it's just, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't like the fact that we kind of are diverting programs that I thought were actually very good programs, and but you know, again, it could just be me. I could be on my own on this one.
I feel you definitely do have some points to that, and to me, the specific part of it with New Japan at this point that I've learned to do surprisingly for myself is just kind of wait and see how it plays out. So.
It's clear I'm in the minority in thinking that I don't think Omega has established himself as a heavyweight, though, you know, I guess now winning G1, okay, I guess maybe that goes a long way to do that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. But, I mean, and also, too, why Omega versus AJ? I mean, why couldn't AJ have won G1 at some point? I mean, he was very clearly established.
Here's the thing for me specifically. Had AJ stayed this year, I wouldn't have been surprised if he had won it.
Okay, and that's fair. Now, I think that would have been interesting, but, you know, that way lies madness. It's all academic now. So
it's just one of those things. I feel that at this point in time with Gedo, he's just like, well, I don't have AJ to do this with. Kenny, you're up.
Yeah. Well, let's just hope. I mean, the thing about Kenny is that, you know, his program with Tanahashi kind of got aborted because of the injuries, which is not his fault. You know, and, you know, I did like the matches with Elgin. But, I mean, let's face it, his two biggest feuds right now are not even in New Japan. His ongoing smack talk with, you know, Austin Creed and the New Day.
Oh boy, yeah.
Over video games. I mean, it's constant. He keeps constant on New Japan programming, making little comments to Austin Creed, and then, you know, his big feud payoff match is going to be against somebody who may or may not have signed with WWE in Kota Ibushi.
Yeah,
I mean that. The biggest stories involving Kenny Omega right now are not in New Japan.
As of now, but I mean, with Ibushi, there is that possibility still. Like, it still exists as an actual thing. So
it's a possibility, but given the way he left, I really don't know. I mean, like we talked about in the J-Cup special, I mean, I think that's what blew up the working relationship between New Japan and DDT, too.
And, I mean, it could very well have been a situation like that, but at the same time, I don't think this is like where years ago where people would be crazy levels of stubborn to work with one another, and, you know, grudges can be held. Sure, Shibata's kind of a living, breathing example of that.
Yeah,
but
okay.
At the same time,
it took almost 10 years for everybody to get over Shibata leaving them. You think that Ibushi's going to be done within 9 months? Yeah, I don't see that happening.
I could see it in the perspective that if they were to do Ibushi Omega at Wrestle Kingdom, you know, at that point in time, I would figure Kenny loses the briefcase via some shenanigans to Naito or somebody else, and they have that match that Kenny's always wanted to do, and Kenny goes over Ibushi, and Ibushi can just buzz off and go elsewhere, do whatever he wants at that point. But
well,
I feel that if Ibushi does work for New Japan at this point, it'll probably be on a freelance perspective and not at all with the rocket boosters that he was going to get had he stayed.
Well, yeah, I mean, that much is obvious, but I also think that it seems like Ibushi's already done his farewell to Japan match, too. It was in Wrestle 1 against Jiro Ikemen Kuroshio at Pro Wrestling Love in Yokohama on the, I think it was the 11th of August, and because that match hasn't been shown yet, so I haven't seen it. So, but it seems like he's already made his farewell to Japan.
We'll see what happens with it and let that play out. We'll eventually probably have something to talk about that next show around once it rolls, because probably that match will have been displayed. The rest of the Cruiserweight Classic matches with WWE will be done at this point.
Yeah. Which I haven't seen, no. and I'm not going to watch, so. No.
I'll just give you a quick breakdown on that. Ibushi Alexander was magic.
I did hear that.
It was pretty fantastic. Gargano Ciampa was pretty great as well, too. Trying to think. Tozawa's had a good couple of matches in it as well, too, which is good for him. So, I mean, we'll see where it goes, because I don't believe they have filmed the quarterfinal rounds, which is what they're at now. And that's all getting done over the next few weeks. So,
okay,
we'll let that play out. September 14th is when the finals are supposed to be happening for that. So our next show probably will be either before or shortly after that. So we'll have more updates by then, obviously.
Let's drag this back on topic.
Yeah,
though.
Exactly. Uh-huh. I mean, let's go through, obviously, we've talked G1. We've talked certain things about it, but favorite matches.
Okay.
The thing we just spoken of. So let's just get
well,
to
what,
it.
Well, why don't you go ahead? What was your top five?
Top five for me, a lot.
In any order for me,
not going in any particular order. Naito Omega obviously was one, just start to finish, great stuff. Okada Tanahashi's time limit draw was one. Okada Ishii, as mentioned a little bit earlier. Nakajima Shibata was very enjoyable as well.
Oh, yes. Oh, God, yes.
It was probably out of that same night, too. Elgin versus Naito was pretty great, too.
Yes. You know what? You just Naito, named, like, I think you pretty much named my five as well.
Just in terms of Naito in general, hating everybody's knees throughout the tournament was one of my favorite things.
Yeah, that was a cool thing that he started, like, doing this knee bar on everybody. I mean, that was, like, you know, his new thing. Also, did you notice he has his new outfit now, too?
Yes,
I mean, like, a couple people ended up with new outfits.
Slightly changed
outfits for the tournament.
Yep, I have the Destino t-shirt as well that I bought, which was pretty great stuff.
Oh, yeah, I need to get that one. I haven't got that one.
Also, here's the thing, too, because for me, a lot of it, that Nakajima Shibata match, it's like it's between that and Shibata Naito as well, like as my mix for the number five spot, which is just, to me, Shibata is one of the MVPs of the tournament. One that we haven't really talked about all that much, who had some, let me just put it this way, and this is something that you and I were talking about that we both agree on. Yano Toru's just nailed the art of, like, his matches of getting his shit in and first sector of the night.
You know, I a lot of people were just frothingly upset about how Toriano did a G1. I enjoyed it.
These were the greatest things.
Because it was just trolling, straight trolling. I mean, and you know, like even you know, taping up Yuji Nagata's ankle so he couldn't make it back to the ring. You know, it's. I mean, lest we forget. Yeah, Yano is kind of a comedy act, and he cheats like hell. But everybody always forgets. His character is supposed to be, even though he's a coward and you know, a clown. He's also crafty. You know. And you know, I enjoyed his matches. I don't really think he was the MVP though. I would agree that Shibata or Nakajima.
Yep.
Honestly,
I
think Nakajima of all people really was the one who broke out in this tournament.
And you know, that's the thing. Mario Fuji had his fair share of good matches, but then he was also in a block with guys like Bad Luck Fale and Tama Tonga, which is just. You can only do so much.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that B Block did not have the star power, but
they had the better quality.
They really had the. I was much more compelled by B Block than I was A Block. I really was. Other than that, honestly, I think you pretty much nailed the top five. I don't have to really go through much of that. But Shibata and Nakajima especially, though, they brought it every night. I will say this. Okada, I thought...
Okada was fantastic.
I thought he was. I thought the matches he worked the hardest were the ones he lost.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, ironic. You know, I thought he put in some hard work in his losing efforts, or you know, his drawing efforts, I should say too. Yeah.
A lot of it is just with a couple of these performances from guys like Shibata, Nakajima, and stuff like that. Okada kind of just had a really sneaky under the radar tournament, which is interesting. But as the champ, he's doing just. Awesome work all around.
Can we talk about some things about the final show?
We might as well. Final, so,
yeah. First of all, the Briscoes against Takahashi and Paige, I completely fast forwarded past that, so I know who won, and I don't care because nobody in that match I care about at all. Jay Lethal against Satoshi Kojima for the ROH title. Yeah, that was okay. It was an enjoyable match, I thought. It wasn't, you know, going to be anything above, you know, 3.5 stars if I were to rate such things, but
It did what it had to do. It gave Lethal a defense. It gave him a match in Japan that obviously featured the ROH title in Japan, which
yeah. And Kojima could still work the crowd. I mean, he's still pretty over. Mm-hmm. The greatest thing that happened at the G1 final was not the G1 climax final match. It was that 8-man with Shibata and the Dads.
Oh God, yes.
It was Nakajima, Masaaki Kitamiya, Maybach Taniguchi, and Goshi Ozaki. My God, that was my favorite match of that show.
Look, the headbutt from Shibata to Nakajima, where he started bleeding himself, yes, was possibly one of my favorite. It's crazy and it's kind of messed up in a way and just not.
And it just, I mean, it was amazing with, you know, it was just, you know, a feature 8-man match at the beginning of it. By the end of it, the crowd was baying for a New Japan versus Noah War.
Yep. And here's one of those things, just the bleeding Shibata image, insane. And like, and let's face it, we'll kind of address this really quickly as well, too. There is the fact that during that final show there's a little vignette of a certain time bomb that was about to drop.
Yeah, I already blogged about that. Yeah, it's definitely going to happen at Power Struggle on November the 5th. Which is also my mom's birthday, so happy early birthday, Mom. It wouldn't be so obvious if it wasn't for the fact that Minoru Suzuki has used that phrase several times while he was in Pro Wrestling Noah.
Hey, Power Struggle, getting Minoru back, that's going to be a big deal, especially with
just as long as they keep the rest of Suzuki gun.
Yeah.
Away. I've really missed Minoru Suzuki in New Japan. I have not missed Suzuki gun.
No.
You know. But even though, like I said, I've really missed Minoru Suzuki. And in fact, I still kind of miss him even from this tournament. Because at this point, I want to see Shibata against Suzuki. I want to see Nakajima against Suzuki too. And unfortunately, that match may happen in Noah.
Yeah, and there's also, to me, a lot of it also does have to do, going back to the middle point, if we're getting Suzuki back, Shibata just having like 3 or 4 months where he's just actively beating up everybody in Noah because they came into his yard and tried to start stuff, that would also be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean,
it might give something for Noah specifically.
I want a Shibata. I want to see a Katsuyori Shibata against Go Shiozaki singles match.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, as much as everybody dogs on Shiozaki for not having charisma,
Shiozaki is a great worker. He
may not have the charisma. Yeah. He may not be champion material, unfortunately, but because, you know, with two very non-distinct GHC and Triple Crown runs in 2016. That being said, I will say he can work the rough stuff with Shibata all day long. Oh, and my proof is the Fortune Dream show that went on, I think, I guess 2 months ago now, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with that main event where it was Yuji Hino and Daisuke Sekimoto of Big Japan against Yuji Okabayashi of Big Japan and Go Shiozaki, and everybody just chopped the living bejesus out of each other, and Shiozaki hung with that. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, Shiozaki will be fine. Having something like that happen where it's just Shiozaki and Nakajima working with Shibata, Great stuff. And I mean, you can use that as never defenses, basically, where Shibata takes the never title to Noah and claims it bigger than, say, even the GHC title. And
yeah.
Just out.
Which, unfortunately, he may not be wrong.
He might not be wrong.
Yeah.
I just think there's definitely something that can brew from that. From that Noah versus Shibata and Dad's match.
Well, you know, there was something that, you know, happened today at the J Cup final that, you know, leads me to believe that that may be the case too. But we can address that here in a minute too.
But before we get to that, obviously, as we mentioned earlier, Steve's not with us here today, but we managed to catch up with him a little bit just before the show here, in which he kind of gave us some thoughts on G1 as a whole. A little bit of Super J Cup, which we'll get to discussing next. So we'll let Steve take it away here. Take it away.
All right.
I am Stephen Cash, talking to you about my favorite G1 matches from this past tournament. Unfortunately, I was not able to join the boys on the show today, as I was watching SummerSlam, and I heard I received an extensive burial because of it. And frankly, I deserve it. I made the mistake. I made the wrong choice. Okay? Let's just put that on the table. I made the wrong choice. Okay? With that said, I've been graciously given the opportunity to share with you my thoughts on my favorite G1 tournament matches. The top five, in fact. But before that, I want to give a couple of honorable mentions, because there really was a lot of good matches this year. I mean, there had to be. There was 27 different shows, and that might be a slight exaggeration. But through it, like, you know, much like the Gold Rush, when you sift through it, you would find occasionally some good nuggets of pro wrestling joy. And we had enough here. We had more than five. So just a couple of honorable mentions. I want to talk about July 18th, actually. All these matches come from July 18th, the opening night. A good night for the G1. Hiroshi Tenzan and Tomohiro Ishii I thought was a great match. It started off a great story for Tenzan. Ishii, of course, you know, made Tenzan look really good with Tenzan's limited abilities. Also, Sanada and Hiroshi Tanahashi, kind of similar fashion, although Sanada is light years above Tenzan in terms of athleticism and, well, frankly, mobility. Tanahashi did a great job making Sanada look great, even putting him over. Good job, Tana. And then also Okada and Marufuji, I thought was a very good match. Pretty much as we kind of come to expect, although I think at the time of recording, the lineups weren't put out yet, but we do know now that Okada and Marufuji will face off, so the booking here of putting Marufuji over made a lot of sense. Good job, Gato. I have faith in you. So let's get to the top five G1 matches, in my opinion, from this tournament. And really, there's going to be a lot of familiar names. It kind of goes hand in hand with my pick for G1 MVP. But number five, Kenny Omega and Yoshihashi from July 22nd. Upsets are very commonplace in the G1 tournament. They're almost expected at this point. And, you know, I think a lot of people had a feeling this would be one of the matches that we would see an upset. Yoshihashi, I couldn't give him MVP based on, you know, this match alone. But he really did put on an awesome performance. And Kenny, as well, did a good job making him look excellent. Put him over, made him look like a million bucks. So Yoshihashi got a lot of momentum starting off in the tournament. Number four, Kenny Omega and Hiroki Goto, the G1 Climax 26 Finals. I thought this was a very good match. I thought what hurt the most, and it may be unfair to hold it against this match, but I thought the American commentating team really telegraphed the fact that Kenny was going to win. You know, I think if you're smart, you kind of realize what's the point in having Goto win other than maybe having him lose the opportunity somewhere down the line. So that was literally the only reason you thought Goto would win the tournament, was so he could just screw up and lose down the line. Because that's his gimmick. They really hammered the fact home. I mean, they probably did this in the Japanese commentary as well. But, you know, they hammered in the fact that he's an 8-time loser. What they should have done, and I apologize if they did mention this and I missed this, but Goto is a tournament performer. you know, when you factor that in, I guess he had a chance, but when it comes to that and everything I just mentioned, the fact that they were hammering in the fact that there's never been a foreigner that won the G1 Climax, and, you know, kind of telegraphed it a bit, so that took away from my enjoyment. But when it comes to performing the match, I thought it was very good. Goto is very good. Kenny is, you know, I thought he had the tournament of his life. Number three, Kazuchika Okada and Hiroshi Tanahashi from August 12th. I am a big fan of this rivalry. I know a lot of people complain about the fact that we've seen this match battle as 5 or 6 times now in the last 5 years. It's pro wrestling. That's going to happen. You know, Toshiaki Kawada and Mitsuharu Misawa, it's not like they only wrestled once a year. They wrestled, you know, sometimes they wrestled 3 times a year if they met up in the Champions Carnival. You know, it's these things happened where they had, you know, I don't even know how many matches they've had. 22 singles matches? I don't know. I don't even know where I'm getting that number. So I'm a fan of following this rivalry because to me it is that rivalry. It is our generation's Misawa Kawada. And I think when we look back, a lot of people are going to realize that. And they're going to kind of realize, wow, we witnessed a really special thing. So, you know, I don't even know if a lot of people know this or not, but they actually flubbed the finish of this match by about 4 seconds. And that's something that they don't typically do in Japanese wrestling. So while some people might knock that, you know, for the imperfection, I like the way they booked the tournament. You know, they're not ready to really light the fire under that feud again, you know. That's the thing. It's not like this feud's on fire. It's just these two happen to wrestle again. And to me, it made perfect sense to go with the draw. Even maybe putting Tanahashi, giving him that visual fall, I thought it made perfect sense. I mean, yeah, Tanahashi's era, it might be gone, but it doesn't mean he has to be relegated to the opening match. You know, he can still go, you know, as long as he's not killing himself. Okay, so number two, I guess it would be Kazuchika Okada and Tomohiro Ishii from August 6th. Wow, this almost was my favorite match from the tournament, but of course the match that's number one I thought just felt slightly eclipsed it. I don't know, Ishii is, you know, I don't even know, it feels pointless to talk about Ishii because everyone knows how great he is by this point. It's not a secret. I was raving about Tomohiro Ishii when he was 217 pounds in World Japan in 2003. You know, that was something I could have hitched my wagon to. But now everyone knows how awesome he is, so... it kind of goes without saying, and Okada, of course, in my opinion, he is the best big match performer in wrestling. You know, there is some dispute there, but that's my opinion. So when you combine the two, it's almost a given that they're going to have a 5-star match. And it is a 5-star match, according to Dave Meltzer. You know, that's reserving your own opinion. So let's go to number one, Kenny Omega and Tetsuya Naito from August 13th. I loved this match. And it's kind of funny because I did, in fact, hear a lot of the hype. I watched this match a couple of days later. And it's kind of interesting with me is when people rave about a match, a lot of times I might go into it and I could actually see it hindering my perception of the match. You know, because you kind of get something built up so much that, oh, this can't be as good as, you know, everyone's saying. And there's almost that human instinct of wanting to be a contrarian. This match lived up to the hype and probably more. I thought this was such a genius match. I thought Naito and Omega, I thought they played their roles perfectly. I think the crowd was solidly behind Naito, and I think it played well into Kenny's promo after the match. Yeah, I was just blown away by it. I don't even really know what to say. If you haven't seen this match, go and watch it. It is fluid. It is insane. There is a spot in this match that literally, I knew it was coming. And when I still saw it, I jumped out of my seat. So I'm just going to leave that for you. I'm not even going to go into depths. Just do yourself a favor. These matches I've listed, all of them, you know, all the matches I've listed, go watch them. They're good. I tracked them down. A lot of them I didn't watch live. I went back and watched them, and they live up to the hype. So let's go on to the G1 MVP. There's a lot of people that you could make the argument for, but to me it came down to Okada and Kenny. And just for the overall historical significance and his performance, I thought this really was his tournament. I thought he had some of the best matches of his career, I think. You know, I didn't even list the match yet with Elgin, which I thought was really good. Kenny was in a tournament where people were having to, you know, reserve themselves as to not, you know, cripple themselves. I thought Kenny rode that line. You know, he made the comment about taking an H-bomb after the finals. You know, I almost don't think that was a joke, you know, because I'm sure he was in a lot of pain. So I got to give it to him. You know, congratulations to him. For people that have followed Japanese wrestling for a long time, it really is a big monumental significance that Kenny Omega is the G1 Climax winner. And it's going to start a trend, you know. I think, you know, he's not going to be the last. He's the barrier breaker, I guess you could call him. So, Super J-Cup thoughts. Wow, what an incompetently booked tournament performed by competently able wrestlers, I guess. I'm not even going to go into everything because I'm already going over my allotted time. In short, I just think this tournament was designed with a purpose. The NOAH New Japan War, it's on the horizon. I think this was in addition to the six-man tag from the G1 Climax Finals the other night with Nakajima Kitayama and Go against the New Japan guys. I think these are the opening salvos in the NOAH New Japan feud. It just kind of is unfortunate because it really did make for a rather boring tournament. I get what they were trying to accomplish. I get they were trying to set up this feud while also giving us the GHC Junior Champion and the IWGP Junior Champion. You know, that would have been great if we had that in 2003, you know, when Kanemaru was, you know, not... Well, people didn't like him then either. You know, I actually have a soft spot for Kanemaru, but even I can say, you know, he should not have been in the finals of the Super J-Cup. And, I mean, there's really not much to say. As far as the competitors, I thought Kushida was the safest pick to win. I would have liked to see a NOAH guy win to give them a rub, but it's clear they're going to do different methods to kind of give NOAH the heat, as we're seeing with Jado and Ghetto now soon challenging for the GHC Junior Tag Titles. But yeah, I just got to echo what everyone's saying. It was just a disappointing tournament. They could have done so much more. They could have given certain individuals from smaller organizations, you know, some spotlight instead of just relegating them to, you know, and, you know, just, here you go, just... little spot for you to shine for 8 minutes before the real stars beat you. You know, I mean, it is what it is. You know, it's not like they can copy, you know, every tournament from the past. This was designed with a purpose, and I think we just have to take it for what it is. And very, very briefly, Death Before Dishonor thoughts. In a nutshell, just, it's a fun show. Some weird booking, you know, nitpicks. If you don't even care about booking, you're probably not even noticing or don't even care, but people like me, it bothers me. Like how do you pin somebody when an illegal man is wedged between you two? That's what I don't understand. The tag match booking didn't make any sense, but I don't know, just because it's on top of my head, Leo Rush I thought looked really good. You know, he should have been in the J-Cup. He should have been someone to get an opportunity to stand out because, I mean, he was so impressive. What else? Main event was so good. I was very into the main event. So much so that I forgot Adam Cole was actually a former Ring of Honor champion. But, so those are my thoughts on those various things. And, yeah, so hope to see me next time on the Strong Style Story podcast. And, once again, I'm so sorry for SummerSlam. So sorry.
All right, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
That was cunning and insightful, or the ramblings of a stark raving idiot, Mark. One of the two. Fill in the blank.
Mixture of both, possibly. Yes. Steve gets to do the job this time around since he's not here with us.
Yeah, that's right. He's not here. He can't defend himself, so he's getting buried today.
We also promised you burials. Jeff, as you can see, started with one.
Oh, well, here we go.
But yes, we are actually on the subject.
We are going the burials. Let the burials begin. Super J-Cup 2016 was a colossal waste of mine and everybody's time. I'm sorry. There were a couple of cool things. I was furious on July the 20th when that first round happened. And I think everybody on that podcast, if you remember the Twitter thread, I think everybody was furious.
We all just very much were surprised and not in a good way in regards as to how things ended up going down altogether in that particular first show. And then from here on out, we're kind of like, well, maybe they'll do a thing or two to sort of redeem it. And from the gate, right out the gate, we had Tai Chi versus Liger, and just, oh boy.
Oh man, the first round, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I could not believe, I mean, the entire second round going forward was all New Japan or NOAH workers. And I just think that even if in the first round matchups, there were some good matchups, there were no great matchups. There were no star-making matchups, and I think that went totally against the spirit of the Super J Cup. Now, I did have some discussions with people, and people wanted to bring up that, okay, well, after this, you know, Kaji Tamato shortly thereafter won, you know, beat Tank Nagai for the champion of Strongest K in K Dojo, and then, you know, within 4 days, Eita beating Yosuke Santa Maria for the I think it was open the Brave Gate.
Yeah.
In Dragon Gate. Okay, first of all, I don't think Shima based his decision 4 days out from Super J Cup, especially since the primary Dragon Gate podcast that's still out there, not to diss Michael Spears, of course, but he hasn't done an episode in a while. But I think it was the Open the Voice Gate podcast. They all pretty much unanimously said that they thought Eita was going over in that match.
I think we all kind of agree that with Yosuke Santa Maria's particular reign being as long as it was, maybe it was something, you know, overdue. And maybe Shima made that decision in regards of, hey, this is the guy that we're going to eventually have get this particular championship next. So
yeah, I don't think that any booking was based on Super J Cup performances, especially since coming back into Super J Cup. Did you know that I think it was Friday or Saturday as we record this? So, like, you know, 1 or 2 days before the Super J Cup final show is going to be broadcast around, you know, around the world, you know, webcast around the world. Kaji Tamato lost the champion of Strongest K title. So there was a chance to broadcast that title to a worldwide audience and maybe get some interest in it, and no. So no, I don't think that the booking had anything to do with that.
No.
To do with Tamato becoming champion of Strongest K, you know, or, you know, losing it.
Yeah, but let's just kind of go this way. If there is one thing that I believe I did call throughout these predictions was the fact that Kushida was just going to be the NOAH killer throughout the tournament.
Well, that was true. Yeah, that certainly happened. But you know, the fact of the matter is, I mean, we kind of knew that Taichi was going to go over Yuma Aoyagi. We kind of knew that one.
But
oh my lord, Bushi going out in the first round? Are you kidding me?
After all that.
Yeah.
We were kind of disillusioned for the moment Bushi went out in the first round. We're just like,
well, that's because brackets were completely blown up.
Yep, we're just like, well, we've lost all investment in this, and that's just personally us. Other people out there may think completely different.
No, I saw at least one. It was I reposted one on the, you know, the Pro Wrestling Confessions site on Tumblr. Of course, there's about 500,000 of those too, but this one in particular basically said, you know, he's pretty much, he or she's lost pretty much all interest in the second round. And, you know, I try to give it a chance. And yeah, the six man that opened this morning was okay. That was fine because, you know, Bushi was in there as the only Rudo in that match, and, you know, was completely pissing off Tamato and Gurikan Mask, you know, to the point, you know, where they were refusing to tag him in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he you know, attacks, you know, even though Bushi gets the win over David Finlay, and then he, you know, spits the mist at Tamato and rips Gurikan's mask. So, you know, very Rudo style.
Bushi did very Rudo evil things, which, you know, it's expected. But I just feel that it could have done way more in the tournament side of things. Obviously, let's just kind of break down the finals as it was. Tai Chi defeating Liger by countout was, as somebody called
horseshit.
It, the dirt.
It was horseshit.
It was the dirt fucking worst was actually what I had in mind. But Horseshit also works.
I mean, Taichi's entrance was longer than that damn match.
God, I mean, Taichi. God damn it.
Taichi, right. Yeah, Taichi.
Taichi's the worst.
He is. I mean, like I said, I've missed Minoru Suzuki so hard. I have not missed Suzuki Gun at all.
Not at all. They can stay in Noah.
They can really just stay in Noah. And, you know, of course, now they're down a guy, too. Because Shelton Benjamin.
Yep, shoulder.
He packed back off to WWE.
Nope, but he's had a shoulder injury, actually, that he has surgery on, so he's not coming back anytime soon.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yep. That was a thing he actually announced himself on Twitter. So it kind of sucks for the guy, because I actually...
Yeah, that does kind of suck. Yeah, overall, though, I mean, Yoshinobu Kanemaru getting to the final should never have freaking happened. I don't care if he is the GHC Junior Champion. It never should have happened.
Taguchi should have beaten him outright.
And
questions asked.
Again, quite frankly, here's the thing about the Super J Cup is that one of the reasons we all love it is because it made so many new stars. Whose star got made in this tournament?
Kushida just got continuously established as the ace of the Junior, which we know that.
Which is fine.
Yes, completely understand that.
I mean, we all point to Hayabusa as, you know, the reason for why the Super J Cup was the greatness. Yes, even though Hayabusa lost to Jushin Liger, but who we all said who was going to be Hayabusa of this tournament in the Super J when we did the special episode, and nobody. Answer is nobody. Nobody got made as a star in this show at all. And I think, again, that just goes completely against the point of the Super J Cup. And I think John Ongedo just basically, it was a very self-indulgent booking for, you know, New Japan and Noah.
Yeah, they just wanted to use that as a way of getting Kushida an even bigger accolade, which I understand. And I just think a lot of it is just everything leading up to that finals match. Just maybe, for the most part, for us specifically, they put the wrong people there.
Yeah, and I think I like Matt Sydal. I don't think he should have gone over Will Ospreay.
I think with Ospreay, it might have been just an issue of Ospreay having all these different nagging injuries from different things, and just a way of kind of giving him a break on it, but. I think Ospreay could have at least done the semis deal.
He could have made the semis at least. I mean, if they were gonna job, you know, which, you know, he would have, you know, gotten the honor of getting jobbed out to Kanemaru, I think.
Or just have basically the whole.
Yeah, it was Kanemaru.
To be fair, I almost would have put a situation where maybe somebody from Suzuki Gun would have just, well, obviously have Suzuki Gun screw over Ospreay, and that's a seed for an eventual, if they really need to bring Suzuki Gun back to New Japan, that would have been a seed for them to square off against Chaos down the road.
Yeah, they
one of their boys, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it was, yeah, and I gotta say that the Kushida versus Kanemaru final was an okay match. I wasn't bored with it. I was just irritated through the whole show, and the Noah GAC Junior Tag Match, that was okay.
The Junior Tag Title matches were good. The Super J Cup Finals match was pretty good as well. Those three final matches were good. It's just we're all kind of just really confused by all of the booking around the tournament itself. Really, yeah. Outside of Kushida winning, which most of us thought was going to happen, it was going to be either him or Bushi, and yeah.
Yeah. Now, just to further bury this, what is the point of the Young Bucks calling out the Briscoes? Because the Young Bucks haven't held the IWGP heavyweight tag titles? Okay. You are aware that you guys are like, you know, a buck 05 soaking wet, right?
Probably, but do the Young Bucks care? No.
Well, no, and that's fine. They can challenge for them all they want. I don't know why this is a thing. I mean, maybe they should, you know, maybe consider, I don't know, dropping the junior ones too, because if they're going to talk about unifying these titles when both the junior tag and the heavyweight tag divisions are nonsense at this point? I mean, was there any drama in thinking that the Motor City Machine Guns were actually going to beat the Young Bucks?
Not really.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thought. Yeah, it was an okay. It was a good match, and I talk with Alex Shelley quite a bit on the Twitters. But I'm sorry, there was no drama in that match for me, and that's
a lot of it is just it's either predictable booking or just nonsensical booking.
Right,
and it kind of came down to for the Super J Cup, and I'm sure somewhere out there Steve is agreeing with this.
But it's just a worrying sign, though, that we were so high. It's like, yeah, hey, turns out Gato, when his back is against the wall, turns out Gato can book his way out of a paper bag and, to good effect. And just between this and my fears about G1, about going forward from G1, yeah, I just don't know. Maybe we're falling back into bad patterns again. But, we'll see. I will note this. There was a couple of cool things that came out of the final. Number one, Alex Shelley giving Kushida like this golden robe for winning the J Cup, which is, kind of like, along the lines of, getting the green jacket if you win the Masters.
Yeah.
I thought Alex Shelley being the one that presented to Kushida, I thought that was actually really cool.
It was a nice little touch for sure. The little Time Splitters reunion there, good stuff.
that was cool. I also like the fact that, further possibly seeding this New Japan versus Noah feud coming up is that when Kushida went to shake people's hands, and one of the last people he got to was Namichimaru Fuji, who was, of course, the winner of the previous two J Cups,
and no handshake.
He got up and clapped.
Yep.
No handshake. I was like, ooh, he is. If my honey didn't already loathe Arafuchi for that. Oh boy, yeah, that was. So I mean, that was cool, and I think that's going to be further seeds for, this Noah versus
New Japan thing. Yep.
Yeah, although I will say, despite all the burials we're giving this, Kushida versus Kenno, I thought was a really good match.
A few more minutes, I think, but it did well.
I think so too. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. Was I think probably the undercard match I enjoyed the most, other than that opening tag match, mm-hmm. was Kushida against Kenno.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I thought that was really good.
Agreed. But I mean,
overall, though, the J Cup, yeah, that was, for all the excitement that we had, this was just the biggest letdown I've felt in New Japan this year.
And this is funny because we still kind of have a Ring of Honor show to cover.
Take us away, Jeff. It's funny. I really was expecting to hash on the salt and bury Death Before Dishonor. I actually ended up really enjoying Death Before Dishonor, I have to say. I thought it was a top-notch show from beginning to end. And in fact, even the two matches I didn't really care about, ironically, both featured a Briscoe brother in them. I thought Bobby Fish against Mark Briscoe was really slow going, and I didn't think it really brought any excitement. And Jay Briscoe and Adam Page, I really just don't care about either of them. I will admit, though, that match actually was better than I thought it would be. But it had a hot opening of the four-corner survival for the ROH TV title contendership. It was Jay White, Kame Itachi, Leo Rush, who I absolutely love, and Donovan Dijak. Actually, I love all four of them. I love all four of the guys in that match.
Dijak, to me, is very unique in the fact that his size and the way he moves around the ring for a guy his size.
So I really enjoyed that match, and so I was with it on that. Shibata against Silas Young, I think, had a slow start, but I enjoyed it too. And it wasn't, and it was a good back and forth between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, hold on, I got working from memory here. I gotta see which match was next.
I mean, obviously after that,
it was Bullet Club. Yeah, that was, I mean, it was fun. I mean, it was just fun. That's all it was. It was just a fun, you know, we all knew. Yeah, we got the answer to our question that we asked on Twitter. It was like, how the hell is Toriano going to do the
turnbuckle trick?
Well, we found out by a pair of clippers that Rocky Romero threw to Yano to unclip it. And of course, you know, it was, you know, Yano winning with a punch to the balls to to Takahashi.
I mean, that
which then segued into Jay Briscoe against Adam Page. I'm just going to point out there were two table spots in this show, and both guys who took the table ended up bleeding. So they must have, like, whatever that table, those tables were made of, were just razor sharp, because Jay Briscoe took a rite of passage into the table. And his shoulders were all cut up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was blood all over the place. And then later, Jay Lethal would go through a table, and his head, you know, his now bald head, got nicked, and he was, you know, bleeding a little bit too.
But I mean, there's that. Obviously, we had Okada versus Castle, which was
That was my favorite match of the night. But oh my god, I thought they should have had. I honestly think they should have let Castle go over.
They're not, because it's Ring of Honor and it's delirious and just, yeah. The problem is
you know, Ring of Honor needs to be strapping the rocket
to Dalton Castle. And to, I think we both agree on this. The fact that they haven't done it yet is astounding to me.
He is over as hell. I mean, he's like one of the most popular guys in the promotion,
and he's not an act that you would think would be over in Ring of Honor of all places.
And you know, if you take away the exotico aspects of him, he can still wrestle like a mofo,
pretty much,
you know. And you know, like I said, this would be the guy that they need to strap the rocket to. I thought once he hit Bangarang on Okada, I thought it was like, oh my god, are they actually going to let him go over Okada? And I would have been happy if they did, but they didn't, obviously.
It's just one of those things where booking Castle against good talent at this point, that's not good enough. Like, it's not going to do him any more honors to just
go up
against these really talented guys. He's got to start beating a couple of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, he's due to go up against Kushida on this coming Saturday, the 27th, at that Field of Honor show. We could talk about that for a few minutes too. In a minute, I'm going to nitpick though about the Okada Castle match, because the camera work was not good. They first of all, they botched the whole Rainmaker pose shot. You know how it's basically contractually obligated that you're supposed to zoom out when he does the Rainmaker pose, because in this case, if he had, you would have seen the boys doing the fan with him, and we didn't see that. And then at the end, at the end, there was a bit where both Okada and Castle were doing the peacock strut, and the camera cuts away to go do some retrospect of Bobby Fish against Mark Briscoe.
Yeah, well, dumb. But I mean, obviously Fish Briscoe, kind of a New Japan involvement, because both of them have been there before.
Well, Mark Briscoe is the IWGP.
Understand.
Oh, thanks. So, yeah.
Short and sweet. It was okay.
That match didn't excite me at all.
Addiction.
So good luck, Donovan Dijak against Bobby Fish. Uh-huh. The Addiction against Tana Elgin and Los Ingobernables. I enjoyed that match a lot. Yeah. I really did, and it was good to see Daniels out healing Los Ingobernables too, with that sneaky tag, letting Tanahashi do high fly flow, and then him jumping over them to do a jackknife hold. I enjoyed that.
And then of course the world title match, and the big one is the fact that after 400 plus or so days of Jay Lethal just dominating Ring of Honor as the world champion, Not to mention the fact that he held the world and TV titles there for the same time for a good chunk of.
This is the first time. This is the first time he has not been held any singles title since April 4th of 2014, which is when he won it for the TV belt from Tommaso Ciampa.
Insanity, and I mean Adam Cole deserved every bit of this. To me,
it was good. I mean, I'm glad that they did something because it. Because, I mean, keep in mind, too, I was live at Global Wars, and that non-finish finish really pissed me off and all that with you know, revealing Adam Cole as part of Bullet Club. And it just everything since then, it just seemed like it was a slow boat to nowhere.
And it finally had somewhat of a actual payoff to it, because now, yes, Adam Cole has been in Bullet Club. It pays off. He's now the ROH World Champion. He gives Bullet Club some sort of influence with a major world championship with him. Maybe now he can finally wrestle in Japan. Finally
he can show up in New Japan. Yeah, I do know that, you know, obviously, you know, right, you know, when they faded out, the celebration was very short-lived because, you know, Kyle O'Reilly attacked all right at the end, which, you know, gee, who saw that one coming?
Just MDK'd him right off the bat right there. I'm like, well, another chapter for Future Shock.
Yeah, that's going to be, yeah, I mean, that's obviously, you know, once Cole became champion, that's the direction that they were going to go. I tried to find, you know, something about the TV spoilers, because I know that, you know, Shibata was supposed to face off against, I guess, Bobby Fish for the TV belt.
Yep.
But, you know, I have not found anything. I looked all day, and I guess, you know, other people had, you know, I guess other people were watching something else last night. I don't know. I mean, something about some TNX show or something.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Either way, it's just one of those things where we'll know a little bit more about it once time goes along and all that good jazz.
We'll see it on Ring of Honor TV within the next few weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so either that or, you know, as soon as, you know, if I find any spoilers, I'll post them to the blog, probably under a cut. So.
And then have we gotten anything on Destruction at all?
No. You know, I looked today. We have had nothing about Destruction. There is not a thing.
Then we can get into the next point, which.
Have you seen Vader against Will Ospreay?
Yes. Just crazy stuff all around. Of just that crowd was bonkers.
That crowd, that is the kind of crowd you want if you're a heel. That really is. Yes. That was off the freaking chain. I think a lot of there were some people who were upset about the booking. I wasn't, because I knew the second that I saw in the spoilers that Pete Dunne had gotten involved, it's like, knew. Yeah, I knew this was storyline. This is all story.
And there were reasons for it too, considering the fact that Ospreay just got done being Dunne for what, the RevPro World Cruiserweight?
Yeah, the undisputed British Cruiserweight.
British Cruiserweight, thank you. Yes. Yeah, I couldn't remember the exact full name of it, but the fact that they had that match and Ospreay had just beaten them for it. It made sense for Dunne to get his put his nose where, you know, he didn't really have any business in, and he had Ricochet to get involved as well too.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be like this weird kind of mutual respect thing between Ospreay and Ricochet, even though, you know, they're in separate factions in New Japan. Mm-hmm. But it became obvious that this was just a storyline thing, and I mean, they could have even show. I mean, if this was ECW, they would have had you would have seen Dunne handing money to Vader, you know, paying him, you know, if this were ECW, it kind of reminds me, excuse me, kind of reminds me in Big Japan, they have, you know, Hideyoshi Kamitani teaming with, you know, the giant Ryota Hama, you know, as a team. That's kind of what that reminded me of, actually.
Interesting.
Even though, Hama, believe it or not, is much more mobile than Vader at this stage in the game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a good match for what it was. I mean, I'm not too up on RevPro,
Not as much for me. I follow more progress than anything else in terms of the UK companies-wise. But I've heard a lot of good things about RevPro as a whole, so hooray for that much. And I think this gives them something to kind of do an even bigger rematch down the road between the two of them.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely what's going to happen. Just to track back for a bit, we kind of forgot to go Field of Honor, which is on August 27th, has New Japan, quite a bit of New Japan involvement.
The Four Corners Survival Now.
Yeah, that one is, with the now champion Adam Cole facing Jay Lethal, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Tetsuya Naito. And also said that there's also an IWGP Intercontinental title match. Michael Elgin against Donovan Dijak will be happening. Yeah, remember, there's a little bit of history between Dijak and Elgin, too, from Ring of Honor, back when Dijak was in the House of Truth.
Yeah, I do recall
that. There's a little bit of history there. Mm-hmm. We have an eight-man... The Motor City Machine Guns, ACH, and Leo Rush against the Young Bucks. Yujiro Takahashi and Adam Page. Well, I like a couple of guys in this match, at least.
And Shibata's working this one too, right?
Shibata will be up against Kyle O'Reilly, which I guess now that O'Reilly is now making a claim for the title, I wonder how that's going to shake out.
This should be very interesting, yeah.
That's Dalton Castle against Kushida, which, please, let Castle go over. Please. Kushida doesn't need this.
No. That he doesn't. Just let Dalton win. Hashtag let Dalton win.
Yeah, seriously, though. I mean, if ROH don't do something with Dalton Castle, they're going to lose him, period. The sky is wide open. He could work NXT. I think that with his deadlift German being as good as Daisuke Sekimoto's, he could fit in Big Japan very well.
For me, the biggest thing, obviously, and kind of transitioning to one of our next points, is how excited I am to actually see Castle up close and personal.
So we were going to talk about that. What else we got here? Bobby Fish against Evil, which I think that match probably happened a couple of times when Evil was in Ring of Honor.
But, I mean, it'll be interesting with him being under Evil rather than the Watanabe
persona
that he had, and just should be a very fun match. Evil's gotten, now that he's sort of gotten some of the jitters after coming back to New Japan, he's been working solid for the
moment. His gimmick is still ridiculous.
it is, but he's doing all that he can with it, and it's kind of working for the most part. He's had some solid bouts.
Yeah, with him actually speaking during the G1 press conference.
Everything is evil.
Everything is evil. There's also a tag team championship gauntlet match, which I am confused as to what's supposed to happen here. I think the winner of this is supposed to either get an instant shot or something. I don't know. It's the Addiction against the Briscoes, against War Machine, against the All Night Express, against Toriano and Gato, which, please God, let them win this. Says Cheeseburger and Will Ferrara.
Yes, the basic gist of it is that the winning team gets an ROH World Tag Team Championship match later that night against The Addiction.
Yeah, it was not very well stated. So, looking ahead at New Japan, there's a Lionsgate Project 3 is coming up September the 1st. No card has been announced for this. They're also starting Road to Destruction. That starts September the 4th at Mie Kuna City Gymnasium. There's a few Destruction shows sprinkled between dates. Destruction in Tokyo is on September the 17th at Tokyo Oda Ward Synthesis Gym. Mm-hmm. Destruction in Hiroshima takes place at Sun Plaza Hall. in Hiroshima and Destruction in Kobe on the 25th. I'm sorry, Destruction in Hiroshima is on the 22nd of September. Destruction in Kobe at Hyogo Kobe World Memorial Hall on the 25th. Nothing's been announced for this yet. We could speculate, but that way lies madness. And I'm sure the second we click off of recording this, they're going to announce it anyway.
Would you be surprised at this point?
It's already happened three other times, so I'm almost counting on it. They were just waiting for us to record. So you're going to say, hey, screw these guys. Let's post this up.
Well, I guess at this point, considering we've covered the upcoming Field of Honor anniversary, so, we can kind of go into the point.
Chris?
Yes?
What are you doing on Labor Day weekend?
Well, I am flying out to Los Angeles and being there for all three nights of PWG's Battle of Los Angeles 2016.
Well, yes, help.
somehow I managed to get tickets for all three nights. The first two nights I'm doing front row, and then the third night is Gen Emission, so try to be there as early as possible, so that way I'm like second row at the very least.
There is New Japan involvement in this. This is on topic.
Yes, very much so. And the fact that Kamaitachi is going to be there as part of the tournament, and so will Jushin Thunder Liger
and Will Ospreay.
Will Ospreay as well. Yes, I keep thinking Will Ospreay more so as like a Progress or Rev Pro guy rather than New Japan guy. I'm still getting used to that much, but yes. Will Ospreay will still be involved in that regard. Of course, Adam Cole is going to be there, just doing the stuff with the Young Bucks, which includes a match against Dalton Castle and the boys.
Oh boy!
Is Dalton
in the tournament too?
Yes, I believe he is.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list now that it's not the case. I thought Michael Elgin was in this too. I might be on crack though. So
I do not believe he was. Dalton Castle is going up against Jack Gallagher, which should be a fantastic match. Given the two are showmen first and foremost with their particular styles, it's gonna be fun.
Outside of the New Japan guys, I am extremely excited.
Matt Sydal too, by the way. We can't forget about Matt Sydal I believe he is both in the tournament. Off the top of my head, yes, he's in the tournament because he's going up against John Hennigan / Johnny Nitro / Johnny Mundo / John Morrison, to those who might or might not be.
There's a lot of Lucha Underground guys, because of course one of my favorite announcements from the Ricochet's in this too.
Yep, Ricochet's going up against Jeff Cobb, so it's basically Ricochet versus Matanza.
So Prince Puma against Matanza,
which is great because
my favorite announcement of all this, Pentagon. You know, outside of the New Japan guys, Pentagon.
Pentagon versus Marty Scurll is going to be a great first round match. And then there's the fact that him and Phoenix are teaming up to go up against Tommy End and Chris Hero, which on night two, which is going to be amazing.
Oh God, Chris Hero against Jushin Liger, the winner of that takes on hopefully Dalton Castle.
That would be fun.
Phoenix is against Ospreay.
Yep, Phoenix against Ospreay, which. I believe
Kyle O'Reilly against Matt Riddle.
Yep, and I'm pretty high on Riddle after seeing him going up against Tommy End yesterday at the Evolve show that they had in Brooklyn. So,
what do you know about Kamaitachi's opponent, Trevor Lee?
Trevor Lee is like 22, 23 years old and probably one of the best high flyers on the planet right now.
So that's right.
It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be fun.
Who would you rather see Kamaitachi up against, Jeff Cobb or Ricochet?
Either one, it's going to make for a fantastic match regardless. Cobb, I like just because the contrast between styles would be insane, and Cobb just throwing him around like a ragdoll would be twice as hilarious, but Ricochet can do some power stuff too, obviously. The biggest thing for me, too, that I want to point out as well is that main event of Night 2 is a non-tournament six-person tag match in which it is Bullet Club, Adam Cole and the Young Bucks against Ospreay, Sydal, and Ricochet.
So that's basically a New Japan match.
Pretty much.
Basically. All right, see? Good stuff. We can keep this on topic, so.
Yep, there we go. And I mean,
so when are you flying out?
I'm flying out that very early Friday morning on the 2nd, getting to LAX by like 9:30 a.m., so I'll probably end up going to like Little Tokyo, getting a lunch at like Shinsengumi or something, just because fantastic restaurant if you're around that area.
How much of a drive do you have? How much of a drive would you have to get to Reseda?
No, as far as I know, like from LAX to Reseda, I believe it's like 25, 30 minutes without traffic, and then going into Little Tokyo might be a little out of the way, but I figure I'll do that while I have the time to do it, because being front row for the first two shows, I actually emailed Aubrey about it, and he mentioned, just gave me a couple of helpful hints for my first PWG goingness of it, so I'll be kind of taking that morning portion to go into LA, going to Little Tokyo, eat, you know, do a little bit of sightseeing, then take an Uber over to Reseda by like noon, one, and then just, you know, get there, check in at the hotel, and then get ready for night one. So
are you staying? You're staying in Reseda then?
Yes, I'm actually staying at the hotel just a block away from the American Legion post there. So I've got a good spot for it.
Oh wow!
Yeah, no, I planned this out as much as I could, so that way it's just easy for me to get to stuff and all of that. So.
Well, then you need, yeah. Well, you'll definitely need to report in on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
When the time comes, because so yeah. All right. Well, since we only had the two of us today, and
Steve's thoughts.
Half of it was Steve's thoughts, it, you know, carefully spliced in, and considering that they have nothing announced for Destruction yet, not even the Lionsgate Project 3 show. I guess we're done. I mean, I thought I was counting on this show going at least 2 hours because of all the stuff we had to talk about. But since it was just the two of us,
we'll probably hit the hour and a half portion with Steve kind of getting onto stuff. But I mean, we'll leave it at that, kind of as it is. Next show-wise, we'll figure out a specific time and everything else once we have the structuring dates and everything else. And
we had the day, so I think I want to talk about this on let's reconvene on, well, I guess it looks like, you know, on September the 11th, which is a Sunday this year. So, yeah, because by that time, there's going to be, a couple of the Road 2 Destruction shows will have happened, and you know, at least we can talk about the main Destruction shows that are coming up. So, did you see that I posted that we have the dates for pretty much every New Japan show for the rest of the year?
I did see that on the block. Yes,
there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot.
We'll cover them as time allows us to in this case. So, yeah, really outside of that, we'll reconvene September 11th. And again, thanks for listening, everybody. We definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And if we got a little randy this time, tough, because yeah, we criticize because we love, and that's, you know, that's how it goes. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but you know, in any event, we really appreciate you listening to us. We will be recording on September the 11th. We will hopefully have more details about Destruction at that point. Hopefully Steve will and or JB will be able to join us this time around. We'll talk about Chris's adventures in Reseda.
Yep.
And we'll take it from there. So once again, Chris, you want to shout out your how people can contact you?
Well, I mean, for me specifically, I'm just over at Brazilian underscore Fury over on Twitterland. Really, that's usually one of the main methods of getting a hold of me specifically in that regard there. So feel free. I probably will be chronicling a good chunk of my Reseda adventures through that account. So good times all around. Obviously for us, we've already gone over the blog. A couple of shout outs earlier in the show, so if you're
I can always plug the blog again. It's strongstylestory.tumblr.com. The Strong Style Story Twitter account is Strong Style Story without the E in style because of Twitter character limits. So, you know, good shout there, Aubrey Sitterson. You can reach me in my civilian identity at GD Wessel. That's 2 S's 1 L. And besides that, yeah. You know what? I was thinking we probably should do a Facebook page, too, at some point. Just to, you know, synchronize it with the Tumblr account, with the blog.
Something to explore, absolutely.
Maybe, but, you know, I also kind of don't like Facebook, but I'm kind of on it too. So it's one of those things.
The struggle is real for Jeff.
It is. It's so real. It's so real you don't even believe it. So anyway, I think that's about all we got. Thanks for listening to us. We'll be back in about 3 weeks. For Chris DeMassino, I am Jeffrey Wessel. Hope everyone enjoyed G1 Climax, Super J Cup, Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor, and hope you will enjoy Lionsgate Project 3 and the Road to Destruction before we get to talk about it. So, anyway, thanks a lot. We'll see you then. Bye.